Blog Talk Radio.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
To be honest, my head was freaking out. You know, there were several junctions where my logical mind was saying, what are you doing? And, of course, my family were saying similar things. What do you think you're doing? You gave up a job. You lost your marbles.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Well, welcome to the weekend, everyone. As you know, this is my weekend. It's Friday night, 7 p.m. here, and I am so happy to be spending the start of my weekend with you. I've got a tea here that is jasmine, and I'll tell you, it's lovely. The last couple of episodes, I had some zippy teas, a spice cinnamon that a listener sent in, which was fabulous, but a bit zippy, and a ginger tea, too. But tonight, this jasmine tea is lovely. It's delicious, the kind you just want to cozy up with. And that's what I'm so excited about, too, because I've got a dear, dear friend on the show today. I wanted to have her on for some time, and our schedules just never meshed because we're both busy people. But I am so excited to have my dear friend, and yep, she's also a mentor of mine, Bev Martin. She's an intuitive and a life coach, as well as numerous other things that we'll be sharing in just a moment. But I thought it would be really fun, because what if your life was interrupted by who you were meant to be? And what do I mean by that? You know, usually here on Life Interrupted, we have sort of disastrous types of things, divorce, illness, all sorts of disastrous types of things. But Bev has a completely different life interruption, and that was one where she sort of found her gifts in an odd way. And she's going to tell us the story of how she found her gifts. But she remembers growing up hearing, this is one weird kid. And so maybe you can relate, as you might have gifts too that are a little different than the norm. So welcome, Bev, to Life Interrupted Radio. I'm so thrilled you're here.
Thank you, Sharon. Thanks so much for having me on.
And you guys might notice the accent. Dear Bev, she's originally from South Africa, so I just love your accent, dear.
Thank you, but I forget there is one.
tell us the story about how growing up in South Africa and, you know, the experiences that you had and coming to terms with your unique gift.
Well, thank you, I will. And, well, you know, growing up in South Africa, so this was, you know, starting out in the early 60s and on, and this was during the apartheid years of South Africa, so it was a very unusual situation to grow up in the first place. But growing up there and having access to so many different cultures and so many different points of view, and of course, you don't know, I certainly didn't know that much of what was happening for me at the intuitive level, should we say, was unusual. But it may have had something to do with that African landscape where everyone's connected and we're connected with our hearts. And there's so much beauty in the African way of the community and the village and the connection. And so that may have been a part of it. But I realized when I was really young that I was seeing things and hearing things that everyone else was telling me either wasn't there, or that I was crazy, or that I was, you know, just making it up and I should straighten up. So I was just aware of, someone would walk into the room and I could feel what they were feeling, or I could see if there was a difference between what they were saying they felt and what was really going on in their gut. So it was like having two channels and being able to see, oh, that's the channel of what's coming out of their mouth and that's the channel of what they're feeling. So there was a lot of that going on.
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine. I mean, growing up is hard enough.
Yes.
But then to have these gifts where you know them to be true. You're like, no, that's reality. And everyone else is saying, no, that's not reality. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
How did you come to terms with these unique gifts that you have? I mean, that's what I, when I have sessions with you, Bev, I love, because you're able to get right to the heart of the matter, and you have so many other skills. You've just put lessons upon lessons and trainings upon trainings. And I, one of the things I want to make sure that we get to after we find out more about your story and how you found, really has got to your gift and were, was able to express it, was how you bring out that in others. So share with us how you found it and got it brought out of you, and then we'll move on from there. I'm just so excited to have you here. I'm just going on and on.
Me too. Thanks. Well, you know, it was interesting because I really did try to suppress it. I got a lot of feedback early on, and, you know, I was seeing family members who'd passed, and I couldn't understand that I would say, wow, good news. I saw Grandpa, you know, after he passed, and he is fine. He is so happy. I've never seen him so happy. Now, you'd think that would be like, great news, tell me more. Well, it wasn't that way. It was more like, you know, shh, you're going to upset the apple cart here. And so for a while, I really did try to suppress it. I was working in an insurance company. I had a nice career in the training department, and it seemed like the appropriate time to, like, put it away and just focus on that logical left brain. But it wouldn't go away. And now I say, thank goodness, you know, how fortunately. But how I discovered it in myself was I got help. I found some mentors, and I didn't know that I was finding mentors at the time, but, you know, in retrospect, it's like, oh, gosh, how fortunate. A dear friend of the family, and a woman who had an artist and creative and really fully embraced her own spiritual gifts, really mentored me. She would just say, you know, Bev, read this or do that. And so I felt like I had an encourager, and we all need someone like that, a mentor, an encourager. And then I found a context where healing and spirituality and meditation and all of those tools of the spirit were being taught, and that helped tremendously. So it was like finding my language, finding my tribe, and finding others who walked the path and could help me with it. And to frame it as a gift was the biggest thing. It was like, oh, this is useful. This is a gift. It can be helpful to others. Okay. So that was the turning point for me, was finding others who could see the value in this rather than having me shut it down.
Oh, I so agree. All of my most profound moments have been gifts from mentors, awakening those moments of recognition and encouragement. And you do it so well for others. I want to commend you that you learned well from your mentors to encourage the rest of us to go out there and find our true callings. You mentioned one thing about finding your tribe, and to me that was so important. When I was I train on body language, which is not quite as unusual as your skill gifts, but still people kind of look at it as a little bit odd.
And your gift, the way you do it, though, the way you do it is your gift.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I love to connect that to the people's beliefs. And when you mentioned tribe, I remember one time I was speaking to a group of professional women in an evening, what I like to call a salon, and it dawned on me, I'm home. This is where I belong. And I love that when you mentioned finding your tribe. I think that's one of the kind of the knocks on the door when you going, maybe this is my gift, when you feel that home kind of feeling.
Yes, exactly. And I think it also comes when we stop trying hard to fit into where isn't our tribe. You know, I forget who it was. Somebody smart said, you know, if you need a new shoes or a new outfit to go somewhere in particular, like if you have to dress differently or be differently to go somewhere, that's not where you should go. You know, if you have to wear a disguise or shut down a part of yourself, and so I think that's huge. Is that recognition of, you know, how hard am I working to fit into somewhere where maybe I don't fit. And there's that ease, and, you know, I love the way you say, you know, coming home. That is that feeling of, oh, this is easy. This is, there's a sense of belonging without having to work at it too hard, and without a fear of being caught out or found out to be different from the tribe. You know, it's a delicious sense of belonging that I think we all look for.
Oh yes, absolutely. And I know when you started to experience your gifts and really work on finding them and calling them out and strengthening them and everything, you took a great big life leap. Share with us what that was, because my gosh.
Sure it did. So I'll go back a little and then go forward. And so when I was 17, I was an exchange student to the United States. And that was a leap in itself, really, because I remember asking my dad, I said, you know, there's this exchange program and, you know, hundreds of kids all around the country apply. And if I get in, can I go? And he was like, sure, you know. Anyway, I did get in. And I got to come to the United States for a year as an exchange student. And during that year, which was, quite a challenge, really. It's a challenging thing to be, you know, completely into a new landscape, which is kind of why we do it. During that year, I was with one of my host brothers from the family that I stayed with, and we were in a car driving over one of the beautiful bridges in Portland. And I looked at the city, and I remember this feeling just arriving and recognizing that it was a feeling, not a thought. And the feeling was, you're going to live here one day. And I remember just enjoying the feeling and looking at the city and kind of going, well, that's nice. But, you know, it wasn't a decision that I made with my brain. It was just like a knowing that settled on my heart. And it sat there in my heart. I went back to South Africa. I married and divorced. I got on with my career. I was carrying on with all sorts of things. But that little thing just ever so often would gently say, you're going to live in Portland. And, you know, my logical mind was like, well, you're crazy. You know, how's that going to happen? So that was one of those things that kept calling me, was that soft little voice that just said, until finally I did. I had come to various junctions, you know, that interruption of various things, and also thought, let me honor that in some way. And honestly, my mind was saying, and finally put it to rest, you know, let's just go and explore this. I thought maybe for a few months and finally put it to rest and then get on with life. And I did then set out. I sold everything that I had, and the strangest feeling is when you come down to where you have no keys. I had no car key, no office key, no house key, because I'd really given up everything. And I came to the United States, and I had one suitcase, about $700, which when I think about it now, it's like, what was I thinking? Because really, that was start a new life on $700, but that's what I had. And I followed that little voice in my heart. And to be honest, my head was freaking out. You know, there were several junctions where my logical mind was saying, what are you doing? And, of course, my family were saying similar things. What do you think you're doing? You gave up a job. what? We lost your marbles. And at each step of the way, that little heart voice would just say, just slow down. Keep going. Listen up. And so the challenge was, you know, the loud mental mind and the soft heart voice, but I followed it. There was guidance at every step of the way. There was love and support at every step of the way. It's not to say it was easy all the time, and that's something we need to know, that sometimes our calling, it isn't just such smooth sailing that's how we know. It wasn't all smooth sailing, but it always felt right. Even when, at one point, a man that I had been dating in South Africa came over to talk some sense into me, and he proposed marriage, he proposed all sorts of things that my logical mind thought sounded wonderful, but my heart said, nope, you've got to do this, and I'm really glad I followed it.
Oh, my goodness, and you did follow it, and we are so glad in Portland that you followed it as well. We've got to take a quick commercial break, everyone, but if I'm sure you're as fascinated as I am about Bev's story. When we come back, we're going to talk to Bev about these ideas that she shared with us about feelings, not a thought. I mean, that's kind of radical when we think about the things we're taught, as well as understanding how do we know that it's that logical mind talking, or is it our heart voice? So when we come back from this commercial break, Bev's going to share with us some really great ideas that she has for those feelings are not your thoughts, and how do we know which mind is talking to us? We'll be right back in just a moment.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I hope you're enjoying today's conversation with Bev Martin, life coach and intuitive, as I am, and her amazing story of how she found her gift and is now living her gift. My goodness. One of the things she shared in her story that has me intrigued that I find people kind of get a little confused about is this idea that our feelings are not our thoughts and how those are different. And so, Bev, can you explain to us this idea of our feelings are not our thoughts?
Sure. And there's all kinds of great cognitive scientific research about how our heart knows before our head. There's some wonderful examples of this in the scientific world right now. But I would say it this way, is that very often we are motivated by a feeling or a desire or a longing, and then we use our logical mind to organize it and to justify it. And that's a good way to go. In other words, to listen to our heart and then get our mind on the job of manifesting or making this work in the world in that order. However, in our world, the logical, rational mind is we celebrate that so much, and we kind of diss or diminish the power of that heart's longing. We tend to think of that as like, well, you know, those are those childish realms of wishing and hoping and wanting life to be a certain way, but we all live rationally. Well, studies show that really we like to think we live very rationally, but and as far as the soul and the spirit is concerned, that the logical mind is really not great equipment for a fulfilling life or living your purpose or bringing your gifts, because the logical mind is great for, you know, where did I park my car and, you know, have I paid the phone bill? But in terms of really designing your life, you want to be sure your heart's involved. And the way to do that is to listen. And what often will come up, because the great gift of our logical mind is it does have the ability to say, well, what about that? Or what if? Or how will you? And so we appreciate that. But all of us have had the experience of knowing when that can override or talk us out of something that our heart goes, oh, never mind, you know. So I learned an exercise from a fellow intuitive, Sonia Choquette, and I love this. It really helps. What she has us do is at the top of a page write the phrase, if I were not afraid, I would. And then just generate as many ideas and examples that come under that. And really do that often. If I were not afraid, I would go to Italy. If I were not afraid, you know, and I hear from a lot of my clients, if I were not afraid, I would change my career. If I were not afraid, I would do something else. If I were not afraid, I would go to Thailand and work with elephants. You know, whatever, in a way, using this is a way to say, I acknowledge that there's some organization that needs to happen and that my mind will need to get involved. But how can I listen to that heart underneath that fear? And that's one way to do it. If I were not afraid, I would.
Oh, I love that. So many things are generated in my mind. When you said that, my mind just went off onto this list. I was like, oh my gosh. And logically, I don't think I'm a fearful person. I don't think I live in a lot of fear. And I try to listen to my heart. And still, with that wonderful technique, if I were not afraid, I would. And off my heart, my mind.
Off and running.
Off and running on you there. Wow, what a powerful exercise that is. And, you know, I'm curious, though, when we have this list, and maybe, like I said, my mind was off and running. I didn't even write them down, but my mind was like 10 deep. Is there anything we can do to sort of sort or prioritize?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the question I'm trying to ask is, but my gosh, like I said, mine was just off and running.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's the thing. It's like you keep listening, and that's the thing about that still, small voice. It will never let you down. It will keep, I just wish it could get louder, and sometimes there are ways to make it louder, but, you know, there's a consistency to it, and so when you keep listening to your heart, and you keep saying, you know, if I were not afraid, I would. You know, it's like you're saying to your heart, where would you take me? Where would we go? What's right for me, and where am I willing to be led? Because, of course, you're very involved in this, you know. At no time are we surrendering our will to something outside of us saying, you know, go here, do this. It's really our own heart, our own will, our own personality. It's knowing ourselves. And so over time, you'll start to see the same themes emerge in that list. Like, boy, this thing keeps coming up. You know, if I were not afraid, I would, you know, and so then you bring both parts of your brain and your heart to it and say, huh, you know, if I were to follow this longing, what would need to be in place so that I could do this well and safely? And you'll notice I am not a fan of the feel the fear and do it anyway school of thinking. You know, and I'm sure there are times in life when that might be necessary. It's like, feel the fear and do it anyway. It feels to me like leaping off a cliff. I'm like, I don't think I would do that to myself. But when we make small steps in the direction of our longing, we just ask ourselves, you know, what would need to be in place in order for me to do this or be this? When it's nice, small baby steps, we can find that our confidence in the direction can grow, and that we certainly will need courage, but courage, I think, is different from feeling fear and doing it anyway. That feels kind of reckless to me, but courage is always required whenever we do anything that the soul would have us do. And that might be the courage to say no. In certain circumstances, it might be the courage to be who we're choosing to be, and not everyone might like it. You know, it's so courage is in there, but definitely not when the steps are small enough, and we have a feeling like, oh, you know, each baby step brings me closer to what it is I want to do or be. There's a kind of a certainty that comes in that. There's a heart certainty that's a little bit different than the type of certainty our logical mind would always like to have, you know. Logical, our minds can go so far into the future, and the feeling in a body is really more in the now. And so that's one of the ways you can know if you're in your thoughts or in your feeling is like how far ahead, because, you know, the mind likes a five-year plan. The heart can be more sort of like, go here, read this, meet that person. You know, it's got a much more immediate way of leading us.
Oh, my goodness, that's great. You know, you brought up this idea of naysayers, and I'm also thinking of, you know, the physical outside of us types of naysayers. We can. I want to know about some of the ideas about how not to let those stop us, as well as then after we've got just a short period of time before we take a commercial break, and then after the break, perhaps we can talk about those voices that are lodged in our head that are naysayers.
Those inner naysayers, yes. Well, you know, the outer ones, I like to believe that there's love behind it. And even, you know, even the most critical of external naysayer, if they're taking the time and the trouble to say nay to us, they must care about something. And so I like to sort of look for the love in it. If it's hard to find, then I might dismiss that particular nay. But I look for the love and go, oh, this person may be concerned for us or have a vested interest in us taking a particular path. And so when to look for the source of their nay, and it can often be love or concern or worry, and we can look for that. It often, you know, when if they know that we're going to be fine and well, which may be the real concern underneath it. I think there is a big difference, though, between hurting another person. You know, we sometimes we think, oh, I can't do that. It's going to hurt that person. To really inquire, like, will it truly hurt or harm another for me to follow my heart? And that's different from they might not like it.
Well, good point. Good point. And as we get ready for this commercial break, though, I want to share a story that Bev helped me uncover. And that's why her work is so profound around this idea of the outside naysayers. I came to her a while ago with a complaint about a naysayer. And as we began to uncover who this person was and how they moved in the world and the culture they grew up in and the culture they're in now. And, you know, culture is not all about ethnicity. Your family cultures, and there's many, many cultures. So it's not all about ethnicity. The one amazing thing that came during exploration with Bev that changed not only my relationship with that nay, but also with that person was as we began to uncover this, it all became so apparent where I was refusing to see it before, that this person lived in a world with a high need for safety. And my globetrotting as an author and an international speaker around the world, a radio host going here and there, really upset their sense of safety. And they were very, very concerned about my own personal safety. And so their nay was based on their need for safety and not really a concern, not saying nay to me, like, you shouldn't be doing this. It was all about safety. And once that person and I had the conversation around, yes, my lifestyle is different than your lifestyle, but these are the steps I take to stay safe. And that was a profound conversation that altered this naysayers in my relationship. So I want to share that with the audience on how naysayers aren't always naysayers, and we shouldn't take them as Debbie Downers and sad Sams and explore what's behind the nay. We got to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to find out from Bev, okay, so we've talked about the naysayers outside of us. What about those voices in our heads?
Oh, yes.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We've been talking with Bev Martin, intuitive and life coach, as well as a longtime mentor of mine. We've been talking about living our gifts, finding out our gifts, as well as then once we find our gifts, sometimes it takes a courage to make that leap, as well as understanding naysayers. And one thing I want to find out from Bev is, we've talked about the external naysayers, but sometimes, Bev, I've got a chorus in my head.
Oh, yeah. They're the worst.
That's singing all sorts of praises for the nay. So how do we differentiate that chorus and work with that chorus to understand what it's trying to tell us and still move forward with the messages from our hearts?
Well, here's the first surprising thing, and you know, I too have a very healthy chorus that likes to sing out gustily when, you know, at various key times. So the first surprising thing that I do with my own inner chorus, and I encourage my clients to do, that surprises them. They look at me like, what? The first thing I say is, thank them. So say thank you. Thank you for alerting me to such and such and such. Thank you. Because the first thing that happens is those inner voices, usually they're not very polite. They interrupt. They're loud. They're not, you know, so one of the ways that we teach those inner voices to communicate with us nicely is we're nice to them. And we say, thank you so much for your concern. What would you have me know? What would you have me know is like, you know, it's like asking a nosy neighbor, you know, tell me more. What would you have me know? Because the intention of those voices is positive, even though their style is so annoying. And so over time, you can teach those inner voices to be more polite by being polite to them, but also treating it as if it did have a gift in its hands. You know, the story I love to think of is the story of Icarus, you know, who made the wings so that he could fly close to the sun. And he might not have had an inner voice. He may have had outer voices that said to him, that were trying to say to him, well, hey, wait a minute, Icarus, I see you're sticking those wings on with wax, and isn't the sun hot, right? And he either didn't hear it or dismissed it or said, anything that's not in alignment with what I'm trying to do, I'm just going to tune out. Well, we don't want to do that. We want to have a filter that says, does this inner voice have anything of value to offer me? And let me take the value and leave the rest. So we do listen to inner voices. We thank them very much, which makes them a little more polite the next time. And we sift through and say, is there anything of value? And so we've got to take the squawkiness of it. You know, usually it'll be like, bah! You know, you're never going to, it's got that sort of quality. And we say, thank you. What would you have me know? And sometimes it will be, you know, slow down a little on this, or you need more support. Or when we find that positive way of taking the value from it, we can actually get really grateful for that chorus, especially when they start singing a little more sweetly.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. So I just want to recap really quickly, and then we'll move on from here. Everyone, make sure that you have your pencil and paper out, because the first one that I've shared with this great question was, if I were not afraid, I would. And then we go
on
to
what would you have me know?
What would you have me know? So those are two fantastic questions to understanding and living our gift. Now, Bev, I know your gift is, if we were to talk with the logical mind, unusual. It's a very rare gift. It's a lovely, lovely rare gift. How do we work with those kinds of gifts that are different, are rare? I think those times is where we feel the most out of place. And I know you have a wonderful way of pulling out what you like to call the person's internal or their metaphor. What are some ways that we can work around this idea of coming to terms with maybe our gift is unique and quite rare, and this idea of the personal metaphor?
Beautiful. Well, it seems to be, and I've been studying metaphor because I love language and been studying metaphor, and the statistics show that apparently we use about 6 metaphors a minute. And there's a great YouTube clip of Steve Jobs just speaking. You know, he's a great example of a creative person, and his language is all full of metaphor. And so what we mean by that is we live inside of symbols. And so I might see a client, for example, who is a helper, and maybe it's obvious that she's a helper. She's a nurse or in the medical profession, or she does something that is a helper. And it's like for her, she lives inside the metaphor of helping, and she has a core question, which may not be conscious to her, that her core question is, how can I help? So everything for her is about helping. One of the ways you can know what your own metaphor is look at the results. Look at your life and say, like, if my life were a movie, what kind of movie is it? What kind of symbols are there? So maybe I'm a learner and a student. Maybe I'm a helper. Maybe I'm a person who's an artist, a creative and expressive. So the way that I help people to find their metaphor is by asking questions. And we're asking questions in such a way that the unconscious mind, that one that lives just below our logical mind, can respond. And so it can be very helpful to find your metaphor, find your symbol, and then ideally to say, is this the one I want? Because we are living, we want the life that we have to be the life that we want. And it isn't always that way. So when we know the metaphor for this is the life that I want, and then we compare it with this is the life that I have, that also gives us some insight as to where changes could be made if necessary.
Oh my goodness, I'm thinking about the profound, this is the life I want, and then reflecting
yes.
back, oh my goodness. This is the life I have.
Mm-hmm.
That could be quite a profound shock for some people, I would think.
A client that I had some years ago, I'll never forget her, because she came in and she'd had a really awful dread diagnosis, medical diagnosis. And it was a shocking one, and she just got into action, and she changed everything. She left her job. She quit a relationship that had been sort of dragging on for years without going anywhere. She, I think she told some people off, too, and she just, it's like suddenly this realization that her life was going to be very short made her change a lot of things. And she just went into action, and she changed a lot of things, and she went more quickly and more closely to the life she wanted, because she could see the contrast between the life she wanted and the life she had. And the good news part of the story is that shortly thereafter, they called to say they'd made a mistake on the diagnosis. And so she got to live the life she wanted. And I doubt that she would have made all those changes without that. So we could even say that diagnosis was kind of divine.
I was going to say that. Isn't that interesting? That sometimes happens, those knocks on the door. I want to backtrack for just a minute, though, because as we were talking about personal metaphor and you were mentioning some of the symbols, we can be more than one symbol, right? Because as you were talking, I'm really a learner and a teacher.
Right. Definitely. What we're touching on, too, with that is archetypes. In a way, like an archetype is a bundle of symbols. And we are so many of these things. We're also different things at different times. And so what I will often see, just because of the makeup of the lovely people that I often see caregivers when they are done with being caregivers, and they don't know a new way. And so they're sort of like, I'm burned out, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I know I don't want to be this anymore, but, you know, what's next? And so there's the archetypes are a way of finding out, like, which part of all the multi-splendid ways of being in the world, which part of me wants to come to the fourth now? Which part, you know, wants to, you know, and so often caregivers who are exhausted get called by creativity and art or music or, you know, and there again, it's that longing, that little longing that says, oh, if I had the time or if I were not afraid, I would, you know, oh, I would do this. And so that's really that calling. It's that little something in our heart that says, you know, you've done that. You've done a great job. Here's the medal and here's what's next. And we can even be called by what feels like a destroyer archetype, which in many ways is actually a wonderful way of making a shift. It can seem negative, you know, somebody who wants to leave a relationship or change something or quit, you know, it could, we're a nation of people, we don't quit, but sometimes we need to quit. And what's calling us next may be, you know, art creativity. It could be a call to the caregiver if we haven't already done that. It could be the jester. You know, there's some wonderful collections of metaphors that just for convenience we call archetypes. But to listen to your own heart and to say, like, if I could be or do whatever I really wanted now, what would that be? And it might not be forever, which may be helpful to know. It may not be forever. It may be as part of the journey to get us to the next junction we're called.
I think that's so powerful, is to understand that that doesn't have to be a forever choice.
Right.
That it's not, if I could do or be now, what would that be? What would I be doing? What would I? That's profound. And knowing that we can re-ask that question as we continue to explore and uncover where we're headed.
Exactly. It's a journey.
And you're so right about we are not a nation of quitters, for sure. And that sometimes gets us into the trouble of trotting down the wrong path for far too long.
And then doing it harder. Yeah,
that old nose to the grindstone, and you know, it should take hard work. And I'm not saying that sometimes it isn't hard work. Stopping and evaluating is the key component here. Is it worth the rewards? Is it worth everything that's happening to me? And your story about the client and the diagnosis is fascinating, because I find that oftentimes there is so much emotion tied up in illness that when we're able to shift that emotion or shift how we're living, oftentimes the illness will go into remission or begin to heal itself. And it's all about not just healing the physical body, but healing the thoughts and the emotional body as well.
Absolutely.
Wow, Bab, we could keep going on and on. We're up against another commercial break. Yeah, time flies when we're talking together. One thing I would like to share when Bev and I come back is this idea of thoughts and the emotions behind things, and some techniques to release some of those emotions. Just some more techniques, because she's been sharing some great techniques already, but some more techniques to uncover those emotions and release them. So let's quickly get this commercial break and we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm with Bev Martin. I'm intuitive and life coach and just a masterful skilled person as far as understanding and uncovering your personal metaphor and how to live your gifts and how to find your gifts. And we've covered that the thoughts are not our feelings, and that idea of the logical mind and listening to the heart mind and how to tell the difference. One of the things I think that we want to share about is this idea of, I would say, old emotions that get in the way. Maybe emotions that get in the way of our making decisions, and sometimes the emotions that keep us stuck. So how is an emotion different than a thought? And I know that we've been talking about the idea of feelings and thoughts, but sometimes we get sort of stuck in old emotions. Let's uncover some of that idea of how to release those so we can have the courage to move forward.
Great question. Well, you know, often an emotion is designed to move us forward. And so a feeling will come that might not be comfortable, but it's there. And if it's an old emotion, it's probably an old memo from ourselves that we haven't attended to, you know, but keeps coming up. It's like it's really calling for our attention. And there are several ways, but I would say my umbrella technique for any kind of emotion is to respect it, is to honor it. I'm not a fan of necessarily expressing all of the emotions to everyone. I feel like we are the ones who have to get our own memo. Like, you know, to ask ourselves, like, what is this feeling trying to tell me? Or, you know, what would you have me know even of the feeling? But old emotions, those are great to sort of get the message from them, to say, what are you trying to tell me? Because I think they don't linger unless they've got something to say. I think Pema Chodron said something like that, like, until we get the message, say, from a symptom or a feeling, it can't go. And so asking it, interviewing it in a way, so, you know, what is this feeling? What would it move me to do if it could, is really useful. I know for myself, if I have a tangle of emotions, I like to talk it out. And if I haven't worn out my friend's ears, I like to talk it out more so I can hear myself think, really more than anything else. And that's what the service I like to offer my clients is I like to make a space. It's like, let's really listen so you can hear yourself think. Because, you know, when we can hear ourselves, we go, oh, that's what's underneath that? We just need space to be able to, like, pull it all out, like coins or wool, or, you know, put it out on the table and see it. And in a way, that's the work that I do with metaphors. Like, let's pull it all out. Let's have a look at it. Oh, how does that relate to that? And when we can see everything clearly, we can get the gift of the emotion and help us move in the direction it's trying to take us.
That's wonderful. And I know you have such a skill with pulling out the language and understanding the language that your clients share with you, being able to dissect it. And I also want to share that what I love about Bev is when you actually have a one-on-one face-to-face session, And sometimes she'll even point out certain body language
and say, to the expert.
Isn't that interesting? You keep doing this, or you keep doing that, or what is over to your left? You keep motioning, you're gesturing to your left or to your right. And I find that fascinating, that we express ourselves constantly in ways that we're not aware of, that other people, such as yourself, highly trained in it, can dissect and help us uncover. But I'm thinking about the times of the people that aren't highly trained, that are just feeling it or going, isn't that odd, or why are they doing this or saying that?
Right. And you know, that is just, we human beings are remarkable. I think we're just wonderful the way we're designed, you know, and we have this inner knowing that we can operate really on all the time. And I would say, you know, we're so empathic, we all are, intuitive and empathic, that notice like how you feel when you're with a person, especially when you come away feeling more uplifted than you were before. You know, there's some energy exchange that happens there. And also even notice what comes out of your own mouth. I often say, if I hear myself giving, I'm not a great advice giver. I'd rather help people to see their own, you know, whatever they want to change. But if I do hear myself give the same advice more than once, I listen and go, oh, is that for me? You know? So it really is just sort of paying attention with a lovely sense of humor to yourself. Like, what wisdom is my body or my words or my thoughts expressing? You know, if my soul is trying to get my attention today, what would need to happen for me to listen, you know? And so sometimes just having a practice. For me, it's the daily tea. And, you know, like you, enjoying your tea, I don't start my day without sitting down with a cup of tea. And it's a pseudo-meditation practice, but I sit down with my tea, I think about the day, and that's a perfect opportunity to sort of check in with ourselves. Because, of course, there's a million other things we could be checking in on. There's email. There's about 1,000 ways now with social media to be checked into the world. But it's very important that we take at least one moment each day, regularly, like an appointment with yourself, so that when your soul is trying to get your attention, which it always is, it need not get loud. It need not rap hard on the window. It can just be that gentle checking in. It's like, hello, self. And, you know, how are we? And what can I know this day? What can I know? It's also helpful to have an intention, because, you know, intuition and guidance and even our own personal metaphors, they guide us when we're going somewhere. Like, if we're not going anywhere, we don't really need to be guided, right? We're just sitting on the couch eating bonbons, which I'm a fan of at times too. But if we're not going anywhere, we don't need to be guided. So at the very least, when we set an intention, even for a meeting or an event, to say, you know, my intention is such, this is how I'd like it to go, and in order for it to go that way, how do I need to be? Oh, you know, maybe more open, more flexible, whatever. But as soon as we set that intention, we start to notice that everything around us supports that intention, helps us to, you know, meet it. As soon as we say, this is where I'm going, even just for this moment or this meeting or this day, then those feelings and inspirations and guidances around us will co-conspire with us. And so I recommend a sort of a daily practice of just checking in, being with oneself in a good way.
For sure. I love that. As well as something came to mind as you were talking about setting an intention. Not too long ago, I was sort of ranting, shall I say, to a friend of mine about something that had happened. And this is where listening carefully and being open and willing it comes to play. Because they dutifully listened and listened. And pretty soon, the only thing that came out of their mouth was, so what were you trying to achieve? And that stopped me in my tracks.
Great question.
I thought, I have no idea. I went into that situation not knowing what I was trying to achieve. No wonder I didn't get what I wanted.
Results may vary.
Exactly.
So true. You know, there was an expression, which I think is healthy too. It just sort of gets it off your chest. And then we get back to that sanity that says, all right, what do I really want to have happen? And how do I make that so? But I love the question that your friend asked you. It's perfect.
Absolutely, especially in that situation. I think they realized that I had gone in without a clear intention and upset I didn't get my outcome when I didn't go in with wanting one.
Right. Funny.
Fascinating. Oh, fascinating. Bev, you know, we could just keep going on, and we'll have you back for sure because this is just wonderful. But tell the audience how to get a hold of you, and I know if you guys are not in the Oregon area and can have a face-to-face with Bev at Pacific Northwest area, I know, I'll tell you out loud, she does phone and Skype sessions too.
Oh, thank you so much, Sharon. Thanks for this opportunity. It's so easy to talk to you. I can see why you do this so well. People can reach me at www.bevmartin.com.
Yep, pretty simple, folks. Just her name, bevmartin.com.
If this has
touched your chord or you felt a slight feeling like, I need to explore that living my gift, I strongly recommend Bev. So check out bevmartin.com and get a hold of her through her website. And everyone, go have a great day. Make it a fantastic weekend. And join me next Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, for another episode of Life Interrupted Radio.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com. Listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.